MK, I had to frantically scramble for the record button because, as always, even just in the lead up, there were so many nuggets. I was like, hang on, we gotta stop. We gotta press record. It's great to catch up with you.
It is always a pleasure when our paths cross, Tim. Like, truly, truly. I just always get so energized. I think that's probably part of the reason why so many amazing things kind of spill out from both of us, is because we fuel each other's inner innovator.
Welcome to Out of Home Insider, the first podcast for media and marketing executives that connects how offline attention drives conversion. My name is Tim Rowe, and for the past 3 years, I've been interviewing guests about their unique insights in bridging this misunderstood and undervalued opportunity for brands to create alchemy in the real world. Today's guest is MK Gettler-Porizkova. 10 years ago, MK was winning awards and caffeinating the greater Boston area as a manager at Starbucks. Today, just a decade later, MK is the CMO of Loop and Tie, a gifting platform that is disrupting the traditional idea of putting your logo on a coffee mug and calling it a gift by focusing on sourcing gifts from small artisan makers to create a marketplace full of unique, actual gifts like handcrafted nesting bowls or a cowboy fire pit grill. And every gift comes with the story of how it came to be, enabling connection with the artist while maintaining their ethos of being the first carbon regenerative platform of its kind. MK came up through the performance marketing ranks with stops at HubSpot, BirdEye, and Alice before taking the reins at Loop and Tie. And we talk about some really hard topics like balancing the responsibility of ethics and the bottom line while still being a marketer, and how to ensure that everyone from the consumer to the creator receives the value they're expecting. We discuss the importance of storytelling as an amplifier for your brand, no matter what tactics you choose to tell it, and how being a facilitator is not only a superpower, but also a skill to master in your career in pursuit of solving meaningful problems. So that's the big idea I'd like you to consider during this episode: facilitation. How can you facilitate something meaningful today, whether for your company, in your business, for your family, a friend, heck, even a stranger? How can you facilitate value creation today? In the spirit of facilitating value creation, I'd like to invite you to visit tryadscout.com. That's tryadscout.com, tryadscout.com, and check out the first free public access directory for marketing in the real world. You can find everything from blimps to wrapped cars, billboard trucks to billboard boats, agency partners, everything in between, and connect directly for free. That's tryadscout.com. AdScout is simplified discovery for marketing in the real world. Now, without further ado, let's go.
Welcome, everybody, to the Out of Home Insider Show, a podcast like no other, hosted by the one and only Tim Rowe. Get ready to have some knowledge dropped on you and to be entertained, because nothing's more valuable than food for your brain. So sit back, relax, we're about to dive in as the best industry podcast is about to begin.
MK, I had to frantically scramble for the record button because, as always, even just in the lead up, there were so many nuggets. I was like, hang on, we gotta stop. We gotta press record. It's great to catch up with you. MK, thanks so much for being here.
It is always a pleasure when our paths cross, Tim. Like, truly, truly. I just always get so energized. I think that's probably part of the reason why so many amazing things kind of spill out from both of us, is because we fuel each other's inner innovator.
I completely agree. The first time that we met was a couple years ago, and I was early on in a company called One Screen, and you said a few things then that I still use in talk tracks today, talking about the opportunity to educate and enable CMOs about the impact of out of home. And you're CMO of a B2B gifting company called Loop and Tie, which I'm a big fan of personally. And I know that a lot of members of the audience are going to go check that out at some point during this conversation. But in developing more of this CMO perspective for our audience, something that I would love to get your take on right out of the gates is, there's so much emphasis put on being at the right place at the right time in this modern marketing conversation, really driving for conversion. Where does connection with the audience, where does connection fit into a world that's so heavily driven by KPIs?
I love this question. But I think when you frame up like being at the right place at the right time, a lot of times people use like, luck in this. And I think there is some semblance of luck and serendipity, if you will, in how things unfold in life, both professionally, but also personally. And I think most folks who would tell you that they're lucky will tell you that it's actually advanced preparation and the intentionality of what they're doing. And so when I think a lot about the right place at the right time, really what that means to me is folks being prepared and then taking authenticity and their preparation around authenticity and intercepting those two components at the right time. And therein, you actually have the moment to make a connection with your audiences. And really, the brands that are winning today are the ones that are thinking about the intersection of their preparedness and the authenticity with which they are out there in showing up in the market in every space and every place.
So not just the marketing technology that enables me to deliver a timely ad to the right screen and the right context. It's really considering, okay, well, why do I want to reach them? And how do I infuse that into my message so that it's relevant and timely and valuable and contributes to the relationship, right? That's, I guess, what connection ultimately is the lifeblood of a relationship.
Absolutely. And I also think, too, that connection done well feels like an invitation. And I think a lot about this, like, there is two ways that I see marketers and even sellers kind of showing up in the world. The first way, and the way that tends to complement scale, is actually transactional. It's, you know, high volume, high velocity type of transacting your way through those connections that you're trying to forge. And most consumers have a pretty good sniff test of like what is authentic and what is designed for scale. And that transactional nature with which some folks kind of show up in, it could be their programmatic, you know, ad spend. It could be, you know, and their outbound outreach. It could be in so many different ways. It feels like a transaction. You feel like you're just kind of like another number kind of being crunched through the process. But I think the folks in the brand specifically and the marketers specifically who were thinking about being invitational, their messaging and the way that they show up, the like the why of what they're saying and the what and the how, all feels like a really warm invitation from someone who is offering you the option to work with our business and not selling or trying to transact that person through a business. And I think that is going to be that's a turning point for marketers right now who have been so focused on performance marketing for so long. And it really has been about the transaction, right? It has been about scaling as much of the transaction as quickly as you can to capitalize on intent and, you know, the demand in the audience. And I just think that that tactic is starting to wane in efficacy. And so, and that's largely because we're desensitized to it as consumers, because we've been transacted at and to for so much of our careers, both actually not just our careers too, but our personal lives, that we're starting to dull our senses to that. And it's the folks that use their performance marketing, supplement it with connection and think about being invitational that are capturing the hearts, the minds, and of course, the wallets of folks who are so compelled by their positioning and market.
Is that a mindset shift that you see happening throughout the marketing world? We've seen, Airbnb and Adidas come out and talk about, hey, we're shifting away from performance and focusing on brand, because what we're finding is, yeah, it's hard to measure, but it's driving a better bottom line outcome. Is that something that you're seeing across the marketing world?
We're starting to see it at these larger organizations, for sure. And I think a lot of folks that work at smaller mid-sized companies are like, well, yeah, sure. Like Airbnb, Nike, they have the budget that they can invest in brand. Yeah, that works for them. And arguably they already have huge brands. So like they're already out there doing the thing and they're just doing a different thing on top of that. What I think I would like to see more frequently, but I'm not seeing a lot of, is folks thinking about the opportunity that they have to emulate really what Airbnb and Nike, Adidas, et cetera, what they're thinking about right now with brand. And what they're thinking about is, what are our values alignment? How are we aligning those values and that messaging and the evocative, almost emotion-centered way with which we're showing up in the world with our marketing efforts? And so many marketers are like exhausted right now. There's like,
sure,
there's a dark cloud hanging over our marketing
right now. Marketer right now.
No, it's tough. It's so tough. And there, it is a really tough time for marketers to think like, well, I think about it as like, they're kind of the Wizard of Oz, like turning all these knobs in the back behind the curtain, and they're doing all these things. And they're like an interdisciplinary marketer with so many responsibilities. And it's really hard to do more with less, but that's exactly what this is going to require of marketers right now. You have to do more with the less that you have, less budget, less headcount, you know, less like buy-in, whatever it may be, you sure have less of it. But the way that you actually start to get more out of that is by thinking about your brand, your why, your values, and using that through line to be super intentional and deliberate with everything you put out there into the world.
And that can be really, really hard, not only creating internal alignment and a sense of belief, but then conveying that, right? Really facilitating the transfer of emotion to your customer. How do you, as a CMO, how do you approach aligning values internally and externally with key stakeholders and customers? How do you approach just that task of alignment?
I love this question because it's also a chance for me to check my privilege because I work at a company that cares a lot about our values. Yeah. Loop and Tie is the first and only carbon regenerative gifting platform wow on the market, which means that we offset our carbon emissions by twice the amount that we're putting out there into the world. We're one of the only ones that thinks about holistic sustainability as well, including the environmental sustainability, which I just mentioned, our packaging, anything that comes out of our warehouses. Those are all 100% recyclable, sometimes biodegradable. So are you the little worms in your compost pile? I get very excited when a Loop and Tie box arrives. But we're also really, really devoted to economic sustainability. The space of corporate gifting is really interesting, whereby a lot of the items that you, the tchotchkes, if you will, that you get, the sure branded mugs, the water bottles. And,
yeah, charging exactly cord or something.
They're largely mass produced. And the carbon emissions from those processes is actually quite harmful for the environment. And from a marketer's perspective, you get this item, you just had a like somewhat visceral response to another branded mug.
got a whole cabinet full of them.
Well, you end up maybe putting them, you know, out to pasture, just donating them or, you know, throwing them away. And so not only do you now have a negative affinity with the brand that sent that to you, you now also are contributing to the ongoing waste that ends up in our landfill. And so we think that instead of doing that, we see corporate gifting budgets as like a way to stimulate local economies, to help support small, independent creators, makers, and artisans with the gifts that they're the wares that they're curating and power our marketplace with those really interesting items. So what we see is like, we actually see corporate gifting budgets as like capital for small, you know, independent creators and makers. And the other thing that we care a lot about is the social sustainability as well too. So you can support local economies, but even better to support local economies from historically marginalized communities or like local economies that also are doing good through and with their products. So for example, 70% of the products in our platform are either women-owned businesses, BIPOC-owned businesses, queer-owned businesses, or they actually have a tenant of social impact in their business. There is a new sunscreen in our marketplace who actually donates a portion of the proceeds from their business to skin cancer research as well too. And we look for brands with really compelling stories like that. So this is a very circuitous way of me saying I'm privileged because I work for a company whose values are something we use to grow and build our business with. And also whose values orientation align directly with the buying audience of our product. We know that the marketers that are entering the workforce right now, we know that the HR professionals that are entering the workforce right now are largely actually millennials. In fact, millennials now make up the largest percentage of our active workforce. I think it's close to 32%, 33%.
Crazy. And those folks, that's a fun fact.
Right? Right. And those folks are like rising into positions of authority within their organizations, meaning they have budgets they can spend or they're hiring and assembling teams to build out the strategy of their company. And they're looking for vendors. They're looking for tech providers, for solution providers whose values help propel their own personal and professional value systems as well. So the piece of the pie here is if you're creating a brand that is facilitating connection or aspires to facilitate connection with their audience and be thinking about the intersection of brand and performance marketing, you have to be thinking about what values am I propelling in my audience and how am I helping them do good for their own personal selves? And also how am I helping them do good with and for their business as well too.
And that really comes back to the first piece of the conversation about creating connection. When you talk to people about the things they care about, whether that's through a billboard or through a Instagram story ad or however it's an email, whatever it is, a press release, well, now I start to understand you and feel like you understand me a little bit better too.
Exactly.
It's exciting when you've got a very clear vision as a company and the service and product that you provide is aligned to that. But maybe for somebody that is struggling with that, maybe they found product market fit and got traction, or they've scaled to a certain level and kind of woken up and realized, I don't know that my company has a defined set of values. How do you think about being close to the problem, crafting a solution, and integrating your values into that solution for the problem that is worth solving?
Yeah, it's not an easy position to be in, to be the person who is thinking and looking around and being like, I'm not quite sure what our values are.
Like, sure.
Not an easy position to be in. But it's a position that is a really valuable one within an organization, because without that person looking for values, without that person asking for it to be expressed through their brand, no brand is ever going to step out ahead of the curve and be part of a dialogue about something much bigger than themselves. Simon Sinek would call this like the infinite mindset versus the finite mindset. Organizations without the values, without the higher purpose why, are arguably there in the finite mindset. They are here for short-term goals. They're here for the here and now. And they're not thinking about the bigger picture for what they could stand for and what the aspirational journey that the team is on is really culminating towards. There are no competitors in that world. You know, there are like the really you are your own competitor. It's just the expansiveness of your mind and what's possible that starts to come in when you think about the infinite mindset. But I recognize that not every company is like that. And marketers have a unique position to gain alignment within the organization to be talking about and asking, like, what is our why? Like, what purpose do we serve? Like, how does that show up in our workforce? How does that value that we have about, you know, uplifting underrepresented communities or historically marginalized communities, how does that show up in our hiring? How does that show up in the companies that we choose to partner with? Like, marketers are in a great position to question this, all because we now sit across the totality of the funnel, right? Like, marketers' job used to be like leads, 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 leads.
Sure.
Now a marketer's job is like leads and customer relationships and, you know, branding and all of these things that we are now responsible for across the entire customer lifecycle. So who better than to ask and push a company about values orientation for better storytelling, for better cohesion in that customer journey? And of course, like, I know I have performance marketers thinking this right now, like, that's great, but what's the ROI?
We got to pay the bills, MK. Right? How are we going to pay the bills?
And like, I get that, right? Like that's the point of all of this right now. The disparate tactics that you're doing are just that. They're disparate and they're tactics. And the sum of their part is only going to incrementally improve a small subset of the big picture. And so when you start to think about the bigger picture, the picture about why your product exists, the problems that your customers have, both in your product and around your product or goods or services, whatever it might be, there's a through line of helping them champion a values orientation through the messaging, the narrative, the storytelling that you're doing across all of the media and mediums that you're expressing your brand in.
How does the time horizon that we think about these things on, how does time either trick us or mislead us? How is time a variable in all of this?
There's a long way for me to answer this question. So I will try not to go that route because of like time, like what is time? What is time? Like if you believe in time and like the multi-dimension, like
to control you.
There's that.
But we tend to think on like too short of a timeline or too long of a hot timeline. I'm thinking about how in 30 days I have a meeting with my CMO about last month's marketing efforts and how they performed, right? I'm thinking in a 30-day time window.
Yep.
But if I think about it in a 24-month time window, the things that you're talking about become much clearer and much easier to apply. How do you balance that?
I'd say this might be one of the single most difficult aspects of being a leader in the marketing world today. Is the constant cruising altitude changing? You are constantly down here in the weeds thinking about like the micro conversions that are happening on a weekly basis through like your paid advertising, for example. And then you are bringing yourself up to a cruising altitude of showing the strategic narrative for 24 years. And I'm the first to admit it's a tough life to live to just balance and juggle two timelines. I think the folks who do best in this are the folks who, I will use creative terminology, might be a little lazy like me. Like I work smarter, not harder. And I'm always looking for the most efficient way to get from point A to point B. So I actually love having the 24-month vision in mind because it helps me make smarter, stronger, more strategic investments now to play things off in the long run. But I will say, like, this is not an easy thing for marketers to start to think about. They're so used to the myopic, like, here, now, directly what's in front of me. And that's just been conditioned by this, like, the urgency and, like, the era in which we became marketers during hypergrowth. And it's like, all or nothing. You're either the first out of the gate or you're last. And, like, those are the only two options you have. But I think that there's an emerging segment of folks who are fast followers, right? They see someone doing something, they watch how that unfolds, and then use the time that they have to think strategically about playing the longer game, and that you don't have to be the first out of the gate. You can also be the person that fast follows right after that.
We talked a little bit there about storytelling and storytelling being the amplifier to the marketing that you're doing. We think about out of home a lot in this way, in that a billboard, for example, it might have intrinsic value. It's 14 foot tall. It's 48 foot wide. It's on the high side of the highway, right? It's got these intrinsic qualities But that the opportunity for a brand is to unlock the extrinsic properties and values of this, and being creative and doing something meaningful, and capitalizing on what that opportunity for attention is. So that's how we think about amplifying a marketing message. But talk about how storytelling is the amplifier, and then tactically what the means to an end can be in delivering that story.
Yeah, I think that storytelling is kind of a lost art in marketers right now. The long-term storytelling, like the very like the Shakespearean story arc in your narrative, has kind of been lost because we've been so focused on the here and the now. And what's so interesting to me is that the brands that are thinking intentionally about their storytelling are the ones who are actually being put at the forefront, because their expression of the story and the mediums through which they're expressing that story is what catches flame, catches fire with the folks who are really enamored with it. That person took the time to think intentionally about the story arc. And then we're also really intentional with how and where and why, most importantly, they're telling that story. I like to think about this like the olden days when ye olde town crier would go out there and like scream to the, you know, out into the masses. And like that worked because that was the only like medium you had to tell people a story really quickly. But now we have too many forums, right? We have too many town halls, if you will. Like you could go on your Instagram or your TikTok or your inbox or your LinkedIn, whatever it might be. You're, you know, the local billboards that you see as you're driving to get coffee in the morning. And so it's becoming so much more prevalent for marketers to think about this piece of the story that they really need folks to focus in on, and then how this medium encapsulates that story, propels that story forward, gives a good cliffhanger, or gives a good, you know, hook for how or why. Yeah, how why you should even be excited about this brand.
When we talk about storytelling, we can't talk about storytelling without mentioning the sudden craze and obsession with generative AI. And AI is coming for all of the marketers. Is storytelling something that ultimately gets taken over by the robots?
I think no. Because the reason being, like, just like, I don't know if you've ever written like a line of code or like you've ever done anything with JavaScript before. Like,
HTML is my maximum qualification on
Hotmail. HTML, perfect example. Perfect example of what you can do with HTML. Even the like mail to HTML is a perfect example of this. Like, the code that you put into the HTML has to be good for it to produce good results on the other side. You have to make sure your script is right. So good data, good, you know, information in, good information out. And the same thing is going to happen with generative AI. I actually would love for us to think about it being like regenerative in a way, so that we can think more about like, how does this actually regenerate and recoup some of the time and energy that we are losing in our day to day, because we're like button pushing and knob turning and lever, you know, finessing. Yeah. This actually will free up creative space for the storytelling, for the values orientation in your brand expression. And the AI will just help put it out there faster and make sure that things happen as quickly as you want it to for the timing, the sequencing of the story that you're trying to tell. So I see it as personally, like I see it as a sigh of relief, because the performance marketing side of marketing was never my favorite. It was always the branding. It was always the storytelling, but it was a necessary evil because that was the best way to scale the story and the branding. And so now marketers get to marketers get to reclaim what we used to be, which was really thoughtful storytellers who really understood our audiences, really understood the problems that they had both in or around your product, and could use that storytelling to be compelling and to really start to galvanize hearts and minds around the right way forward.
Hear ye, what's old is new again.
I love it.
That is something that we can all get excited about. That's just having more fun. Marketing should be fun. It should be fun. It's like the coolest job in the world is you get to tell stories.
No, right? I love it. And I can always tell. So there was this like California, I've probably used this on another podcast or two, so apologies for being like redundant many, many times.
But it's new to us.
There was a California Dairy Farmers Association ad in like the late, maybe mid 90s. And it was that happy cows make happy cheese.
Yes, I remember this.
But it was amazing. It was so great. And like, I loved that. Love cheese. Cheese does not love me, but it doesn't matter. We, as marketers, I'm not comparing us to cows by any stretch of imagination, but I am saying that happy marketers make happy marketing. And therein lies the like kernel of possibility around facilitating connection through the stories that you're telling. So, you know, even right now, like think about the email that you're sending out. Think about the creative that you're putting into this world. Have I put the intentionality into what it is I'm saying, into the visual identity of this asset, into the story arc of what's happening here? And am I intercepting somebody with something that is interesting, is thoughtful, is thought provoking? And that's really where the rubber is going to meet the road, I think, as time continues to go on for marketers.
What does it mean then to influence and enable others through that facilitation?
Yeah. So as the CMO, like your job ends up becoming like chief facilitating officer, like your job is the facilitator of thinking about the minutia. Like you need to be constantly thinking about how am I pushing my team to think bigger, to be thinking about the entirety of the story that we're telling and the little kernels that we're leaving behind in the story that someone will come back to and be like, ah, yes, that makes so much sense. Even down to like the embellishments that you use in your creative assets. Like, does that tiny little like squiggle come back and play a role in something later on? If not, cut it, try something else. If the terminology, the language that you're using, if there's a word that really matters to you, like think intentionally about those things and then highlight that with frequency through and to your team to say like, I think we can be more intentional here. I think we can be more thoughtful with how we're showing up in this tiny detail. And suddenly that tiny detail has a snowball effect on facilitating your team's ownership of being intentional, being thoughtful, and using every element of storytelling in what they're doing as marketers. I think cinematographers, like they're who marketers need to aspire to because they think so much about the visual details that come into the storytelling details that come into, you know, a movie, for example, a TV show, the callbacks that you'll have on a series, you know, seasons later. Those are the things that I think marketers forget are so, so powerful as they're consuming that media, as they're ingesting that story. And they have every opportunity to use that type of storytelling in what they're putting out there in the world.
Beautifully said. I think growing up as someone who aspired to be in marketing, I had this idea in my head of what the role of a CMO is or what, you know, what is the CMO supposed to do? And admittedly, had always believed, oh, well, they're just the smartest idea generator in the company. And they come up with the clever new jingle or the, you know, the very creative Super Bowl spot. Is that a prevalent misconception of what the job of a CMO is? Is, hey, every great idea has to come from the CMO versus I want someone who can get the best out of my team and the most creative thought process. Is that a misconception that people generally have about CMOs?
I gotta tell you, if I'm the smartest person on my marketing team, my company is in trouble. if my company is expecting me to come up with like the wild harebrained things that we should be doing, then like we're not going to be as successful as I think everybody hopes us to be. Because I believe in what's called the meritocracy of ideas. I think that ideas come from everywhere and everyone. And a leader, and I'll layer in the CMO in particular this, but a good, strong leader will actually empower folks to think in the bigger, broader sense and propose ideas and ask good questions to surface the intel and start raising and facilitating dialogue around what's possible here. Now for the CMO, I'm actually part of a CMO community, and we talk a lot about the title Chief Marketing Officer, the ing on marketing. We're like one of the last executive functions that has ing on it.
It's a verb, right? It's something to do.
Yeah, exactly. And like there's chief engineering officers, but really they're the chief technology officer. There's the chief financial officer, chief operating officer. Like operating is a thing and like that makes sense. But for marketing, what we're talking and dialoguing about now is like, aren't we really like the chief market officers? Like, aren't we thinking about what is happening in the market right now? Also keeping the 2-year vision in mind for what the market's needs and wants and desires are going to look like. And our job is to basically take those two things and orient the company in the directive to achieve that 2-year ahead milestone and be out ahead of the curve of that. We're also the voice of the market. So we understand the problems that they're facing, both in our product, but also around our product, and are surfacing those insights internally in the organization to produce better storytelling from the marketing team, better selling, more invitational or insightful selling, better product functionality and product vision, better service solutions that are available, whether they be like through a service recovery team or just through the product itself. And so chief market officers have just started to rise to being the strategic advisor for the organization. And it's not just about the product leading the vision. It's about the story that informs the product that then the market can start to get excited about. And it's just that slight little dropping of 3 letters makes a huge difference role of that function for an entire organization.
Fascinating. I'm excited that we were able to capture this little moment in time as the inflection point is taking place, and we can check back in a few years and see how much that has developed. MK, a question I'd love to get your thoughts on from your own personal career development. We talked about the need to be close to the problem, to craft the solution, to find product market fit, to keep the brand ethos at the forefront of the storytelling. Curiosity, once you figure out, we talked a little bit in the lead up about how you're going through a project at Loop and Tie right now of going through all of the data, years worth of data, just random old file boxes covered with dust full of data, just all sorts of weird little things and how you're learning new things about the organization, about the company, about opportunities. How does curiosity play into this? Is that a tangible skill? Is curiosity a skill?
I think so. I think curiosity is a skill. I think there are certain folks who approach this with an open mindset versus a fixed mindset, or the open mindset would be asking what is possible. They'd be looking at all this data. They'd be looking through all these like digital files and digital clutter and saying to themselves, what's possible with this data here? What was possible back then? What is now possible? And then what will be possible after we start thinking through the implications of this data? Then there are some folks with a fixed mindset who are going to come into this with such literal insights and really just say, like, this is what this is, and this is the only thing that this will ever be. And so I think that's a big shift for a lot of folks right now, is opening up the possibility into that more open mindset and embracing the possibilities that are ahead. And we're lucky at Loop and Tie, we have a lot of possibilities of what's ahead of us. We also use that champion like statement everywhere like we possibly can. When something good happens, when something feels like a roadblock, like, we keep each other in check by saying, what's possible here? Like, what can we do? How can we manifest something really, really helpful for us right now? This is not just a temporary setback. This is meant to redirect for us to divert our attention to something that we didn't previously see was possible.
Right. That personal growth mindset, how that aggregates as a team and rolls up into a company, right? And that guiding principle, I'm sure, from the leadership structure down, of this is an environment where we want to ask, what if?
Absolutely. And that's where the meritocracy of ideas, like, that's a self-sustaining ecosystem of itself. When you always foster the what is possible mindset, you then facilitate the idea curation from the team. So everyone and anyone can come up with the best, most innovative ideas for the organization. And it doesn't require a top-down hierarchical mindset to run and grow and scale a company. So we're all about that limitless possibility mindset.
I love that. And same here. So agree with that. And it's something I'd instill into my son and folks that, that I engage with throughout the day, is just like, there's so much opportunity to do something amazing today. Even if it's not something that you woke up with, that you were thinking about and just so anxious to do. Every day has possibility to be amazing. And it's a choice, right? That's a choice. That's something that we've talked about. For Out of Home at Large, this is a global audience listening. It's founders from the buy and the sell side. So from the agencies and the publishers, business development teams from both. There's brands listening into this right now. But specifically for the global out-of-home community, what advice would you give to us on bridging the conversation between what we're talking about as an industry with ourselves and reaching out and having more conversations like this with marketers at brands who are thinking about the things that you're thinking about? How would you recommend, maybe potentially as it outreach or education, what are the things that are being under-delivered to you from our industry?
You mean specifically the out-of-home industry or just like
out-of-home, offline marketing, traditional media? It could be all of those things. I think that we kind of get lumped into that entire bucket, but the redheaded stepchildren in the room, the not always the first consideration for, some of the growing brands globally.
Yeah, I think, and one of the reasons, coming full circle in our conversation, that when we first met, one of the things that you illuminated to me was how much creativity can be infused with an out-of-home activation. As a marketer who was forged in the ways of digital marketing, like, out-of-home, you're right, was off my radar. I was never formally trained in it, never thought about it. I even worked, my prior employer was, outbound was bad, like out of home, outbound was bad. Yeah. Only inbound is the way to go. And so the stigma, unfortunately, pretty much eroded any potential for me to understand and learn more about that industry. So like, that's one thing I would say, the education to what you were talking about is a huge opportunity there. The other thing that I think is also a misconceived perception about out of home is attainability. So when you think of creativity and attainability in the intersection of out-of-home advertising, so much is possible there. Like, wow, we talked about an activation during the holidays at an airport where people had gifts delivered for the passengers and they told Santa what they wanted and when they got to their end destination. Like, such a cute activation. Beautiful storytelling about the compassion of an airline, of the magic of the holiday season and the magic of surprise and delight. And now I have such a positive, if not visceral, reaction to this airline. You know, like, I just think it's so, so cute and enamoring. And brands have the option to do that without having to eat up a massive portion of their budget. It's dedicating the space for the creative storytelling. It's thinking about the audience and that, like, the emotion that you'd hope to evoke, and then creative solutioning the activations around that experience to create something really memorable, which then breeds connection.
MK, a question that I'm asking all guests now that I've borrowed from a podcast I love. It's called Invest Like the Best. And the host asks every guest this question as the closing question. I thought, there's not a better closing question, so I'm going to steal it. What's the nicest thing anyone's ever done for you?
Oof. I know. I am so lucky to just be surrounded by, like, incredibly nice, kind, generous people. So it's hard to pick just one.
Maybe one that stands out recently, something that, you know what, let's pick something that someone on your team has done for you recently that would have otherwise gone unnoticed in a, you know, typical setting. What's something that would otherwise have gone unnoticed that maybe we can give someone a shout out for?
Yeah. Well, so my team, I like love my team. They know I love them. We're like obsessed with each other. We like LinkedIn, like high five each other all the time. Yeah. We like Slack high five each other. We all work more. We don't see each other, but we just have a really good time. But an interesting thing that I love seeing in our team, any chance you watch Ted Lasso?
Oh yeah. Love Ted Lasso. Yeah. Great out of home, by the way.
Great out of home. Right. So, you know, this new formation they're using for their team and their team structure.
Sure.
It's like always playing football. I forget what the name of it is, but it's like essentially that the entire team, nobody has a fixed position on the team, and everybody is looking around to figure out what role am I playing in this moment at this time to help support the best outcomes for the team. And my team, I don't know that they know that they're playing this version of soccer in marketing, but the nicest thing that my team has been doing for me lately is moving their position around the field so that there is more time freed up for me to focus on the highest level priorities for the organization. They're coming into their own after having been at the company now. Like, what our newest addition to the team has been here for 3 weeks, I think. And shout out to Anne, our second newest addition. We're a super small team at Loop Inside. Bridget, she's been here since the beginning of January. And Molly is like the OG on the team, just like me. We started, she started, was it late 2021, maybe early 2022. So we're all relatively new to this team. But the team has been knowing that the company needs me to be the chief market officer. They see me needing to focus on highest level long-term priorities. And they're just shifting to a different spot on the field to help me free up the capacity to do things I need to do to move the ball down the field for the team. So that's the nicest thing. They don't know. I don't even think they know that they're doing this, by the way. I think that's also what makes it so nice, is that they're not doing it because it's, you know, that they're like, they're not doing it because they get something from it. Mm-hmm. They're doing it because they're like, this is just the way that the company needs me to show up right now. And I feel empowered and emboldened to do something like this.
That's powerful. It's powerful. Yeah. I couldn't think of a better way to bring this conversation home. MK, give us the Latin long. Where do folks get in touch with you? How do they find Loop and Tie? There's obviously a big B2B audience that's listening to this. Make sure that they can find Loop and Tie, potentially, you know, maybe some customers listening right now. I love Loop and Tie gifts, by the way, if you are looking for the shameless testimonial and plug for why you should sign up for Loop and Tie and send me a gift. All right, I'm done. MK, give them the Latin long.
So Loop and Tie, just like looping and tying a bow on a gift, is L-O-O-P.
Oh, I get it now. L-O-O-P.
Get it? A-N-D-T-I-E.com. We also don't think you should gate generosity, kindness, and appreciation. So you can sign up right now for free and send Tim a gift. He's been eyeing one of the chef's knives.
The Damascus chef's knife, because I have a... I don't know. I got like the Target special in my drawer that I've sharpened so many times that I don't think it can't cut anything anymore. So yeah, if you want to get your favorite out of home podcast as a gift, it's that Damascus Steel at loopandtie.com.
If you want to hang out with me, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm the only MK Gettler out there. There's very few of us Gettlers, and I'm the only MK variety of the Gettler. So you can find me on LinkedIn as well, too. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all the same things at MK Gettler. So I would love to connect with y'all and geek out about branding and what I'm calling brand performance marketing.
I love that. Well, MK, this has surely been the first of, I think, several conversations around this, and I'm excited to come back and see how the chief market officer category continues to develop. Can't thank you enough for being here and sharing as willfully as you have.
Oh, my pleasure. I am so humbled and just love getting to chat with you anytime I can.
Thank you, MK. And if you found this to be helpful, please share it with somebody who could benefit. As always, make sure to smash that subscribe button. And wherever you're listening, leave the podcast a review, because that's how you help us grow. Until next time. Time to know just who you
are. Quarter century, I finally came to my senses. I finally got my hand up on the tinted Benz, kid. I see the world clear through my tinted lenses. With the dream and the drive, the possibilities endless. Now print that, send this all the way to Tokyo. Take a trip down south, down to Mexico. Next stop, Shanghai, the world-class trade show. First class all the way, because that's...